Roxo Media House.
A Signal 51 is police code for an investigation. A law enforcement proceeding that is a systemic and thorough attempt to learn the facts about a possible crime that is complex and whose facts and circumstances are generally hidden, at least initially, behind obstacles that can be coincidental and or man-made. Investigations methods are formal. I'm John Henry, a journalist. My partner is Jake White, a retired Fort Worth police sergeant. And together we examine the difficult cases of law enforcement, both in Fort Worth and around the region. This is Signal 51. The show is designed specifically for a more mature audience. Some of the content is graphic and is not intended for younger audiences.
On this week of the Signal 51 Chronicles, we're going to be talking a little bit about the shooting in Nashville. So most of the time we focus on telling these historical crime stories, some in the recent past, some in the distant past. But from time to time, things happen in this criminal underworld, the underbelly of society, where we got to kind of stop down and talk about some things that are relevant. And just that happened a little more than 1 week ago in Nashville, Tennessee. On March 27th, 2023, at approximately 9:54 a.m., Audrey Hale, a 28-year-old, arrived at the Covenant School in the affluent Green Hills neighborhood in Nashville, Tennessee. The school is located within the Covenant Presbyterian Church. It's more of an affluent private school, pre-K through 6. At 10:12 a.m., Nashville police began receiving 911 calls. People inside the school were reporting gunshots. Some of the callers reported seeing the shooter, who was later identified as Audrey Hale. At 10:14 a.m., another witness called and reported hearing at least 20 gunshots. Another caller in around the same time frame reported hearing gunfire on the second floor of the school where staff knew students were in the classrooms. At 10:22 a.m., Nashville PD officers, they go by Metro Police, I believe, up there, they arrive. The officers, including Officer Rex Engelbert, interacted briefly with two staff members outside. They told them that many students are on the second floor and that two students were, quote, unaccounted for. Officer Engelbert, Detective Collazo, and Detective Sergeant Mathis, and a number of other officers, did not hesitate and entered the school. Engelbert armed with a rifle, Collazo with a pistol, and Mathis with a shotgun. So with us today, we're doing things a little bit different. From time to time, we have guests on this show. But today, again, we're talking about something relevant in the criminal world. I've got two guys with us. I've got Chancey and Brian. So as we were looking at this story, unfortunately, our co-host John Henry's not here today. He's at his day job, writing some articles, so I'm a one-man band up here, so I had to have some backup, some support with this. So I brought these two guys on because what I think is relevant, so many people have seen the body camera footage of those Nashville officers, the response, the comparison of the other event that happened about 6 months ago here in Texas. They're being applauded as heroes, and I think there's no doubt in anyone's mind that's exactly what they were and exactly how they responded. But we want to take a deeper dive into what they did, kind of the mentality, the logic, their quick response. How did that happen, especially when we compare it to these other incidents? So Chancey and Brian are both partners in a company called The Reticence Group. But in addition to that, they're both cops, veteran cops. They're both veteran SWAT guys, SWAT operators, I believe is the term. So they've got the boots on the ground experience, the real deal. They've been there, done that. But now they also have a company that goes across the U.S. and trains cops with firearms tactics, I suppose. So I'm going to first turn it over to Chancey. maybe have him give us a little rundown of his background and a little bit about the Reticence Group.
No, thanks, Jake, for contacting us and having us come on for this. This kind of thing's near and dear to us because of what we do with the firearms thing. But my background is started with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice back in 98. Did that for 4 years before hiring on with the police department. And through the PD, I've worked in multiple roles from patrol, different directed response or zero tolerance units, training, the weapons range, fugitive-based units, and then two different stints in SWAT. So I've been really fortunate to work in different roles throughout the department, and in year 21 right now.
A little over two decades.
Yeah.
That's about how long I made it, and I said, I got to go. All right, Brian, what we got from you, man?
Yeah, I started my career 18 years ago at a different department, lateraled to where I'm at about 8 years ago or so. A little bit of background, did some undercover work, some deep undercover narcotic stuff, did a stint in SWAT, weapons range, and kind of to go with what Chancey said, you know, this is near and dear to our heart, and we just wanted to train cops to be better.
I mean, this is kind of the event you guys train cops for, right? Or a similar event to a certain degree.
This is like the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl. The stage is set.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot of times, you know, especially seeing this, and we're going to go over the video in a second, but, you know, I don't think anybody wants this to be the you know, the career highlight. I don't even know if that's the right way to describe it. But when it's there, you got to be ready, right? I mean, there is no hesitation. And I think, obviously, there's you know, for anybody to think that fear is eliminated, that would be foolish. But I think you got to be able to fight through that. You got to go rely on that training. But you said something when I talked to you a couple days ago.
Yeah, maybe to the point of capability and willingness.
It was, and it was something about, I mean, you could train for tactical scenarios over and over and over. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that the, you know, at the end of the day, all the training, unless it's different in real life, I think, right? To a certain degree.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to think about the chaos of a situation like that. And the number of people that were there at, you know, in Nashville on that day, having to go through and do with that, have got a myriad of emotions, obviously. And you've got a certain level of capability in each person, and that varies based on the level of training that they have. Then it comes down to willingness.
Right.
And you can train people to be capable, mm-hmm. but you can't train willingness.
Yep.
Capability, on the other hand, will lend itself to people being willing because they feel that they're capable to do the job. And that's the idea behind the training that we do, is to give people the skills, encourage them to continue to work on them because they are obviously perishable, and we want better trained, capable police officers.
And you guys are going all over the U.S., right?
We're booking classes like crazy right now. Brian and I are both on the phone talking to people. Matter of fact, just before we came up here, I was on the phone with another agency here in Texas that's wanting some training, and we're doing everything we can to help facilitate that and get that done.
Awesome. So. All right, so we're gonna watch this video, and we'll have it playing on our YouTube channel. But we're gonna I want to get your guys' take on it as we go through this video, kind of a breakdown, if you will. So let's get that started. All right, so with the video, the first thing we see, the first body camera video we watch is that of Officer Engelbert. He arrives, again, I think he was just a couple minutes response time from the first 911 call. Officer Engelbert's body cam, roughly 3 minutes and 20 seconds from the time he pulls up until the time he starts, till he engages the shooter.
Right.
So they go inside. When he pulls up, a couple things I think to highlight about this guy. We don't know him, right?
Right.
As far as I know, you guys don't know him personally. I certainly don't know him personally. No, from what I gather, he's a four-year veteran.
He's a four-year veteran. I'd like to buy him a beer.
He's maybe had some other experience somewhere, I think. Yeah, I don't know.
Just, you know, just the way he's conducted himself and how calm he looks and the way he's kind of quarterbacking it and directing guys and calling for guys before they even make entry to uh-huh. create a small team or a small cell, and the verbiage that he's using, I wouldn't be surprised if he's had some other training besides 4 years on the streets.
Yeah, I think you're right. So one of the things that we're going to highlight, so we get down to the nitty gritty on this. He gets out of the car and it's got SRO on it. I'm sure that's a school resource officer like it is everywhere else, I would imagine. Perhaps it's something different in Nashville, but probably is. So he pulls up. First thing he does, he goes to the back and he grabs his rifle, right? He wants to be better prepared.
Right.
Good gun of choice to go into a school with, you guys think, under those scenarios?
Under that scenario, absolutely.
Okay. So he goes in. He first encounters one staff member outside, the female staff member. She's saying, hey, there's some, you know, people on the second floor. You can tell that she's amped up, obviously. I mean, most people are never going to experience this in their life.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, exactly. And then he starts walking down the sidewalk, and then he turns around and he goes back to that other set of doors, kind of by where his patrol unit was parked at. He gets a key from another guy, and he starts calling. He said, we need three.
Yep.
Okay, what's his logic behind that?
Odds are he was probably taught, based on just this video and no more context than what's being shown here. So preface it with that he's probably taught to make entry with a four-man team to be able to go in there and to search for the shooter.
Okay, so he goes in. He's with who we believe is Sergeant Mathis, the one carrying the shotgun. And they immediately, they're going into rooms quick, right? Yep. So the first door they get to, unlocked. Go in there and check that out, right? Good. What he should be doing?
Yeah, they don't know where the person's at. Mm-hmm. So they're clearing their way to them.
Yeah, there's nothing pushing these guys right now. And that's the thing, you know. There's no active shots being fired pushing them to a location. So they have to search as much as they can until they either find the suspect or get more intel, usually i.e. gunshots or screams or something driving them to it further into the structure.
Okay. So they get the first room, nothing. They get to the second room. They start, they're moving quick. I mean, again, we're talking about a 3 minute time span, and by all accounts, I mean, it's a decent sized building, right? It's not like going into a house. I mean, they're moving.
They're doing a whole lot, and there's a lot of stuff that's being bypassed. It's no fault of their own because you've got locked doors and you have limited personnel. It's not a matter of waiting for breaching equipment, stuff like that. It's a matter of getting to areas, finding out where that person's at, clearing everything that you can leading up to it. And we don't know anything about the context as far as what was said, put over the radio, and what any subsequent people were doing that were following in after them, which would, and that's a whole nother ball of wax there for them to clear everything that hasn't been. They're going to have to, they're not dropping bodies as far as officers to be able to post, so they're going to have to continue to clear back up to them as well. They're going in there and searching for the shooter, and that's what they should do.
So after about maybe the second or third room, you see them basically just take off running, and they find some stairs. I can assume that they probably heard gunshots at that point, and that's what's leading them to the stairs, because it looked like there was more downstairs they could have searched, but they hear the gunshots, and they're going.
Right.
And they're taking off, and I mean, they're literally running. Once they get to that second flight of stairs, Lee Engelbert, he's literally running down the hallway, right? Running towards the gunfire.
Which is the idea.
Which is the idea. And he's got two other dudes with him. Mm-hmm. So the next video we're going to watch real quick is that of Collazo. He's one of the other detectives that show up. So Collazo's body camera from the video we watch picks up as they go up a flight of stairs, hit a locked door, go back down. Now they're back on the first floor. And they're moving. So his body camera is a little bit different. Not, this is no knock, no slam, or anything like that. He, too, seemed to be pretty well-trained. Or at least he was ready to go. He was ready to engage, right?
Right, 100%.
He's moving quicker than every other person that he's with. And he's the one giving commands.
He's keeping them moving, too.
There's the one in the blue T-shirt. You know, he's pausing at the doors. You literally see him kind of give him the
little Latin, nudge.
The yeah. little nudge to go, right? So the guy in the blue shirt, I mean, at some point, and you, I mean, you guys have trained cops for years. I mean, there's a hesitation from time to time, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you got to have perhaps that little nudge to get through that door and to go. And like I said, with his, the one thing that stood out to me is, I mean, he's passing dudes, right? Yeah. Like he's going.
He's looking for work.
Yeah. I mean, he's running. He's barking out orders and literally two takes off running down the hallway. So with him, one of the things. So I did a little bit of research, and from what I can tell, Mathis and Collazo, I believe Collazo works for Mathis. They're detectives. They're obviously some kind of plain clothes just based on their attire. They're not probably not those fancy homicide detectives or something like that. These guys are wearing T-shirts. So they're at the office when this call goes out.
Yeah.
So one of the other things to highlight, I think a lot of times people as a whole assume that cops always know what's going on. Nashville's a big city.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Not going to know what's going on every side of town all the time unless it's really, really hit the fan. And then by then, it's already 5-10 minutes into it.
Yeah, by the time they patch radio channels, and now the comms are always going to be the first thing to go. And
yep.
And that's, yeah.
So these guys at their desk, I could probably speak from experience. Mathis, at least, as a sergeant, is probably sitting at his desk complaining about some email the man sent him. Just,
nah,
man, just taking it to the sack, man. Like, God, I can't do anything right around this place. Everything I send to the bosses, I get kicked back. He probably has a desk just grumpier than hell, and then this call goes out. Mm-hmm. Now, let's face it. Let's assume these guys are narc detectives or property crimes detectives or something like that. They don't have to go, and nope. They know that. But I believe it was... I'll quote Wade Bowen. There was a time about 20 years ago, Wade Bowen plays with Cross Canadian Ragweed.
Excellent concert.
That's a really good concert. They do a little, what the kids call a mashup nowadays.
We're dating ourselves here.
We are dating ourselves where they're singing The Boys from Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. That's
a pretty good song. And Wade Bowen gets up there and he's his little clip talks about, he's referencing the military, but it's about nutting up and answering the call, right? Mm-hmm. And that's precisely what these dudes did.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
All right, hey, we're probably close. Clearly, they're close, and they're hauling ass. Mm-hmm. So they go, and they team up with Engelbert. Here's the other thing a lot of people probably don't know. There's a very good chance that those three dudes don't even know each other.
High sure. probability.
In a city that size, absolutely.
Yep. And obviously... You know, perhaps it's the department training, perhaps it's outside training, whatever the case may be. These guys are all, you know, dancing to the same song, right? I mean, they're all doing what they need to do, working well together.
It's people that are cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, I think you're right. So when we look at the Collazo video, anything stand out to you guys?
I mean, it's already been covered. The guy is, he's heads up. He's playing heads up ball. With all of it, he's given, you know, given direction to people, and he's taking charge.
Yeah,
I think the thing that stands out the most to me is, you know, you mentioned him kind of having to give that other officer a nudge, you know, and he never seems like he's pushing somebody into something that he isn't going into himself. It's almost like he's bringing those guys with him,
right?
Like, hey. Come on. Like, okay. I'm moving. Keep coming with me. You know, he's not just kind of shoving them into a room. And he is doing an outstanding job of communicating, even when they said we have one down. And he said, keep moving. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, and it's unfortunate, but that's what we're trained to do.
So walk the listeners through that. I mean, you're passing presumably a dead body.
Yeah,
or critically injured.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly it. You know, I don't know what their one down was that they saw, whether it was an adult or a child. But you know, as a human being, it can be difficult to step over a dying person, especially a child, and they're grabbing at you or screaming or, you know, asking for help and you know, we're trained if we're there first and there's still active gunfire or killing going on, that we are to stop that. And, you know, that could be difficult for some people to do, but he knew what his job was, and it was to stop the killing, to stop the shooter. And, you know, I don't know what the outcome was of that one, that person that was down, whether they lived or passed. I hope they lived, you know, but I know that his actions and, you know, his ability to, or his willingness to run towards gunfire, no doubt saved many more from being down mm-hmm. as well.
Without question. You can't try to save one whenever others are potentially going to perish.
Yeah, and we have no idea how many other, I mean, there could have been, you know, 200 other students in that school.
Sure.
I think, I can't remember that the shooter fired 100 and plus rounds. I mean, right. You know, just, I mean, carnage.
Yeah, I think the numbers vary with, you know, the different stuff that you see, but a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So one of the things I always like to highlight, because I believe it is those who are on the street doing the job day in and day out, those are the difference makers.
Without question.
And, you know, when in the private sector, or I guess even in the government sector, they might be called informal leaders, whatever you want to call them. But these are dudes who stepped up to the plate, right? Mm-hmm. So there was one thing that stood out to me. Number one, the speed of it, right? These guys are in, they're going, they engage in 3 minutes flat.
Right.
None of these guys are high ranking. None of these guys are what, you know, bosses, administrators, you know, brass, whatever you want to call them. That's not who these dudes are.
Right.
And I think it's important to highlight that, you know, when the cops who know what they're doing, who are doing the job for the right reason, we always highlight that fact, right? I mean, that's the important thing. The guys who are there that say, hey, I'm not here just for, no, if that was your paycheck and you knew that was your paycheck, well, then nobody's going to go like, yeah, I'm going to go, yeah, this is what I want to do for a living, right? I mean, it's part of it. Don't get me wrong.
The potential's there.
Right, the potential's there, and you have to have the ability to do it. But these guys, again, presumably rely on training, gut instinct, whatever you want to call it. They're not looking for answers at this point, or they're not waiting for commands.
Right. They're not asking for permission mm-mm. to go do what it's obvious it needs to be done.
I think some could make the argument that perhaps what this is the result, albeit tragic, but ended quickly, was because of that. Was because there was nobody there holding them back. Again, this is no knock on administrators.
Agreed. You would just hope that if there were administrators or anybody that served in that role within that police department, that had they got there at the same time, that they would have been of the same opinion to go in there and do what needed to be done to save the kids.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that again, when you look at these other similar events that have happened, there's a consistent theme. I mean, there's people there who should be given orders and are given the wrong orders. And then you get to this one where the people who should be given the orders aren't there, more than likely. And you got the boots on the ground
doing the work. Yeah. And, you know, there's been, like you said, there's been several instances in the past where there's been decision makers there and they've either failed to make a decision, period, or like you said, they made the wrong decision, you mm-hmm. know? And I don't know, I wasn't there. I don't know the thought process behind that, but sometimes that could be detrimental
right.
to the outcome. And we've seen it, you know, pretty recent in events like this where people were asking for permission to act on the radio and not getting comms back mm-hmm. and not doing something. Yeah, these guys aren't those guys. You know, yep. they went in and did exactly what they needed to do.
And you talk about making decisions or not making decisions. The thing that has to be remembered is the failure to make a decision is a decision in itself.
Yes.
Without question. And whenever it's one where lives are hanging in the balance, that's a tough thing to have to live with.
Right.
That's tough.
Yeah. Because going back on these videos real quick, going back again, kind of highlighting the fact. I mean, again, I think what's important, you know, for the layman, if you will, to understand, these guys aren't SWAT operators, most likely. These guys are your relatively run-of-the-mill cop who hears a call and says, I'm going.
Right. And the thing to remember, and I think maybe this is something that people don't take into consideration or maybe don't have the context for, is that a SWAT team is not going to be the bunch of guys that respond to a deal like this more often than not. Because of how quick it happens, it's going to be the people that are closest to that scene are going to respond. And just like this, again, not knowing the context or whether, you know, these guys really work together or not, it's going to be a hodgepodge of officers that may not know one another. And they're going to have to come together with a common goal, which is obvious, and go in there and stop the killing. It's not a matter of a highly trained SWAT team that rolls up with armor and, you know, all the trinkets and all the cool guy stuff, mm-hmm. that goes through the door and has all these resources, all the breaching equipment, all the explosive breaching, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. That's not what's going to show up.
Yeah.
In this case in point.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think that, you know, again, the other thing, you know, in some circumstances, 3 minutes seems like a long time. In other circumstances like this, it's a blink of an eye.
In comparison to others, 3 minutes is a blink of an eye. There's mm-hmm. others that have been protracted incidents that there's body camera footage of that is, I mean, it's gut-wrenching to watch, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Not that this is not, but whenever you compare the two.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it you know, that's the one thing about these videos. It highlights, hey, this is kind of the playbook, right? This is the way it's got to be done. If there's another event like this, it's got to be done this way. And let's face it, again, Nashville's a big city,
right?
Yeah, they got specialized units. They got detectives running there. They got, you know, school resource officers running. They got everybody going. Not every city's that fortunate,
right? And it's not a matter of if it happens again; it's when.
Right.
I mean, just look historically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hats off to those Nashville guys, because it's the way it needed to be done, and they did exactly what they needed to do. And, you know, like I said, I mean, there's undoubtedly, or there's no denying that they're brave as hell.
I mean, they have got the gumption for the job. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
That's a good way to phrase it. Yeah. And I think that, like I said, I mean, you know, I think every cop should be super proud of those guys, and everybody in Nashville should, you know, I mean, if that's a glimpse of how they respond department wide, then sleep easy at night, Nashville, I guess. I mean,
Nashville's a violent city too.
So I can't speak from experience. I don't know that I've ever been there. I can't recall going there, but they did a good job. So real quick on your, with the reticence group, mm-hmm. what's the easiest way to find you guys?
You can go to the website, which is reticencegroup.com. Will be the best way. Find us. We've got phone numbers and stuff listed there. You can get a hold of Brian, myself, and any training that you want as far as firearms, stuff like that goes, we'll be happy to help. We're trying to make a difference in the LE world specifically, just because the way cops have historically been trained. I would say that our approach is a bit different than the old PPC ways of shooting.
Yeah, we're really trying to, and that's kind of what brought this up. You know, my wife and I started Reticent Group 4 years ago doing something else, and got into training and saw the need for, you know, the practical side of training and firearms training, not just standing on a square range and doing the same things that have been done for the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, which is why we wanted to bring Chansey in and start providing this training and just pushing the envelope and constantly trying to progress when it comes to firearms training. God forbid anybody ever needs it, but if they ever need it, it's going to be the most important time of their life right then and there. And that's where we want our training to kick in. You know, tactics and all these other things can be, you know, cut up and debated depending on what agency you work for and how you do it and how you were taught and how long you've been doing it and all these things. But when it comes to actually shooting, you know, we like to say that the target never lies and the timer never lies kind of thing, you know, and we want to train people to be as quick and proficient as possible if the time ever comes up where they need to use their firearm.
You have the, we've heard it many times before where people will say, well, it's not real life. That's not, the target's not shooting back at you. Well, our caveat and our approach to that is if you can't do it at a known distance on a flat range at a piece of paper with no threat of being harmed and perform it there, then what makes you think you can do it if the adversary or somebody is trying to kill you?
Right. No, that's a good point.
And there's people that will die on the hill saying that this is not the real world. It's not combat. It's not any number of things. Reality of it being is you're not going to stand still when you shoot, and odds are whoever it is that, heaven forbid, you have to shoot, they're not going to be standing still either, odds are. So right. You got to move your feet. You've got to – it's a dynamic world. So let's be dynamic in our actions because we train to the realities of – police engagements in this world. You can look at hundreds and hundreds of officer involved shooting videos, and there is a very common theme, and it is not standing there flat footed mm-hmm. waiting for a surprise shot out of your gun. Let's yeah. be realistic. If yeah. it's your gun and you're making it go off, you should want to and should absolutely know exactly when the gun is going to discharge.
Right.
So let's take some ownership of that. And let's get training moving in the right direction, especially for law enforcement.
All right. Well, if you're a cop and you're listening, you got to check these guys out. And we'll say they're the real deal. And then just bring on some dudes that I didn't know. They're legit, trust me. If you got any further training, check them out on their website, Facebook, I'm assuming, too. Or
yeah, Facebook, Instagram, Facebook. Website. Or we got a website as well. So
okay, you got to check that out. And importantly, check this one out, Signal 51 Chronicles on YouTube. Like, subscribe, your preferred podcast platform. Like, subscribe. And next week, the John Henry will be back. He's the author behind many of our true crime stories. I give him this hodgepodge of words, and he crafts them into a thing of beauty. And we'll get up here and start talking. So he'll be back next week with a pretty cool episode. So we'll see you guys then. Roxo Media House.